Hello, dear souls, and welcome back to the second half of our discussion. It is Sunday, March 27th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And we're here with Suzanne.
Hello.
And Percy.
Hello.
Let's begin this segment by once again settling in, bringing ourselves back into the present moment. Let's take a few deep breaths and allow the breath to bring us back into our center. Allow the breath to connect us once again. Heart to heart, mind to mind, and soul to soul. So let's jump right into it.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. Sutra 1.7. Pratyaksa anumana agama pramanani. Pratyaksa is direct perception. Anumana, inference. Agama is a traditional sacred text or scriptural reference, or a person who is a scriptural authority and can be relied upon. And pramanani is kinds of proof. So that translates through Iyengar to correct knowledge is direct, inferred, or proven as factual.
Alistair Shearer's, understanding is correct knowledge based on direct perception, inference, are the reliable testimony of others.
Satchidananda says the sources of right knowledge are direct perception, inference, and scriptural testimony.
Patanjali says right perception arises from direct observation, inference, or the words of others.
Okay.
Pretty similar.
All right. Mm-hmm. So basically, yeah, it's I think we were, Deborah and I were discussing this on Wednesday also. It's what is happening in the moment.
Understanding,
seeing it through experience, direct experience, or inference, basically having had the experience once that I touched that hot stove when the burner's red, it's hot, you know.
So I don't need to do it
again. Seeing
the
burner is red, yeah. Guess what? I know it's hot. Okay, so, and, or here it says as scriptural knowledge or as a person of scriptural authority. I guess that back then was their authority. Now we have researchers, we have people who are authorities in their fields, you know, authorities, and I put quotation marks around that because sometimes it's not
right.
Always the most reliable thing. Usually, though, I think correct knowledge boils down to what we experience. I think that that's probably the most reliable. And even sometimes that can be put to question, I believe.
Misunderstood.
It can be misunderstood.
And Scherer's, his way of interpreting this was, or the reliable testimony of others.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And not necessarily scripture,
mm-hmm.
but just of others.
Mm-hmm. Of others.
So
right.
You can use that.
And here it says the words of others. It doesn't say reliable, but you
right.
know, he's leaving it to you to determine that they're
reliable.
Well,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Your gift of discernment comes in handy.
There we go. There we go. And that's exactly, discrimination is a weighing process. So we have to weigh, you know, how much we know about this source of information and where it comes from and all that. So,
who is that quote from?
Discrimination is a weighing process?
No.
No, what?
When we hear the news. Sorry, I segued.
When we hear
You were saying we need to know where our information is coming
mm-hmm.
from. So many times when we read it online or we hear it on the news,
mm-hmm.
we just take it, oh, well.
Right.
We need to know where is it coming from?
Right.
Who is it coming from? Is it a reliable
mm-hmm.
source?
Right.
In the general accepted knowledge of reliability.
Mm-hmm. And so often we don't really check those facts.
No, we just accept it.
That's fact, right.
And that could lead to misunderstanding.
That could lead to the very next one. So Viparyaya Mityanyanam Atadrupa Pratistham. So Viparyaya is unreal. Mityanyanam is illusion, illusory knowledge. Atadrupe means not in its own form. Pratistham is seeing or beholding. So illusory or erroneous knowledge is based on non-fact or the non-real. And Shira's
misunderstanding is the delusion that stems from a false impression of reality.
Sachidananda, misconception occurs when knowledge of something is not based upon its true form.
Patanjali says misperception is false knowledge, not based on what actually is.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So I think, and this is where we also had like the analogy perhaps of someone who's raised in an extremely racial household and is told all of their lives that minorities are like this, you know, and this is how these people are, you know, those, and so this is what they grow up believing, but they don't have any experience,
right,
you know, of the people that they're being told all these things.
You don't
about.
Have any reliable
right.
testimony of others or
and,
direct
or
perception,
direct experience,
right.
you know, direct interaction, you know, with these people that they're being told so much about. So their whole paradigm is based on an illusion,
mm-hmm.
you know,
on false
information.
Mm-hmm.
But once they go out and they're able to experience and interact with a person from a minority, then their entire paradigm can be shattered in an instant.
And I like what this says.
It's good.
Pretty short, so I'm going to read it. It says, in the twilight, this is an example, in the twilight you see a coiled rope and mistake it for a snake. You get frightened. There is no snake there in reality. There's a false understanding. But still, it created a terror in your mind. It is not only valid knowledge that creates thought waves, but erroneous impressions also.
Yes.
Jumping to conclusions.
Jumping
right.
to, absolutely.
Right.
That misunderstanding and imagination.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I call him a boss, but someone that I'm working with now who, I was on the phone with him before I actually started working with him. I was still trying to iron out all the, you know, all the details. And, I was being a little, vague, I guess, and distracted when I was speaking with him, and all of a sudden the phone went dead, and I thought that I had that I had somehow, you know,
caused this to happen.
Caused this to happen. Yeah, I didn't know. I wasn't sure. And it turned out that he walked into the elevator.
Oh!
and I had lost the signal. But of course, my mind immediately went to, oh my God, you don't know what.
Yes, you had done something that caused this to happen.
Without any knowledge
yeah.
of that being the reality.
And that wasn't correct information. It was a false
yeah.
impression.
And it, like this says, you know, not that that was frightening, but, you know, you get this emotional response that's actually invalid.
Right, and because we will react emotionally whether or not the information is true. It's how our perception is. We react from the perception.
I think that's, again, the judgment. You know, like we right away want to say, is it good or bad, what just happened?
Instead of, oh, what happened?
Okay, should we go to number nine?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to number nine. Okay, so number nine is Shabdanyana, Anupati, Vastusunya, Vikalpa. Shabdanyana is verbal knowledge. Anupati, pursued, phased in regular succession, which I really like. Vastusunya, devoid of substance or meaning. And Vikalpa is imagination. So verbal knowledge devoid of substance is fancier imagination.
Mm.
Okay. And what I came up with for this, a good example, is television, movies. You know?
Really?
Oh my God. gosh, I can watch a movie and replay that stuff in my head over and over. That's why I like that phase in regular succession. Replaying it over and over and over in my head.
For good or ill.
Oh my gosh. And so I guess back then it was stories around the campfire or stories around, you know, the hearth fire, you know.
Yeah.
So that would be my take on it. I mean, reality shows.
which is an oxymoron.
Yeah, right.
In my humble opinion. Sure. Imagination is thought based on an image conjured up by words and is without substance, which reality TV.
Right. Sachinananda says, an image that arises on hearing mere words without any reality as its basis is verbal delusion.
Patanjali says, conceptualization is based on linguistic knowledge, not contact with real things.
Yeah.
Non-experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, yeah.
No direct perception.
Yeah. And back then they didn't have movies, but now we have movies, and that really adds, like, the whole disturbance to the, you know, the
right.
Yeah.
But
they
had
the imagery that comes with the words.
Right.
You know?
But the oldest form of communication in humankind that I'm aware of is, you know, storytelling. Is the troubadour
oral,
or whatever
oral
going
tradition.
Oral
bar,
tradition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And for good or ill, that's how it was put, you know. And after a while, you don't know, is that based in real knowledge? Is that hearsay? Is that a misunderstanding? Is it, but it's taken as truth, like you're talking about the rope and the snake. It's like, and you are then going to react on that perception.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and our reactions our mind does not differentiate, our physiology does not differentiate between a real experience and what we are imagining.
Then the perceived
one. I mean,
the
body
the perceived
still
one.
Reacts.
Mm-hmm.
We secrete the same hormones.
Yeah.
You know, we have the same nervous system reactions, you know.
Again, with the rope and the thing.
Yeah.
If you thought it was a snake, you're going to jump just as high, you know.
Whether it's a rope or a snake.
Exactly,
right.
If your perception is.
Of a snake.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, and this says, to clarify, he says, you hear something, but really there's nothing like that. In misconception, the number 8, at least there is a rope to be mistaken for.
I love that.
Something really tangible.
Yeah. In
but imagination.
Delusion, there's nothing there.
Yeah, in imagination, it's totally. Without substance.
Yeah, without, yeah.
Are we losing you, Percy? Do you have to go?
Well, all right.
Well, thank you, Percy's
I
out.
I choose to go, and I'm glad to have been with you.
Yes.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
And,
yeah.
I could come back again. I just
yeah, absolutely. We'll be here in 2 weeks. Okay. We enjoyed your input.
Thank you so
much. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, you have a good evening.
Namaste.
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 All right. So, and now, yeah, so.
We're on 10.
The verbal delusion. We kind of puzzled over that last time a little bit, but I was in meditation and it just kind of hit me.
What hit you?
About the TV and the radio and the, you know, storytelling, that would be how that, why they specify verbal knowledge as
right.
opposed to, and where the difference between the misconception and that was.
Well, verbal's almost like, you know, you take someone else's word without
well, that's it.
Really even thinking.
Right, so.
Because this one, again, I mean, these are interesting ones that we're coming up with this book. He says, suppose I say, John took his car to the garage, and on the way, all the tires got punctured, so he had to remove the wheels and give them to the mechanic to be repaired. He drove home very fast and got into an accident. And you say, oh, was it a terrible accident? You're only hearing my words. You haven't taken the time to think. If you thought about it, you would say, if he gave all four wheels to be repaired, he couldn't drive it back.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear things and we just sort of
right,
don't really listen.
We don't put any thought into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
We do that all day long.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think what the reality shows, that's even more true. Because
oh my gosh.
We're just sitting there.
And then we have those images
mesmerized.
To replay in the mind as well.
Yeah.
You know, that just compounds all that.
Just sitting there staring.
Yeah.
There's no active participation at all when it comes to TV.
But then, again, I mean, there are, like, informative documentary shows and things like that.
There's lots of good information
like
out there.
Last time, there's
mm-hmm.
the extremes as well. Yeah. There's good and there's, here I go with judgments again.
No,
but
this is discernment. This is discernment.
And non-beneficial.
I think
yeah.
it's discernment.
And this is where we use our discernment, yeah.
Right. What is going to give me, bring something positive to me
mm-hmm.
and what is not?
Right.
That's not judging the information, that's just making the choice and the decision that it will be beneficial.
Right.
If for some reason somebody sits there and thinks it'll be beneficial to watch this program, you know, for them, maybe it will. But my discernment might, but I'm not going
exactly.
to judge them.
Exactly. And, you know, you're absolutely right on that, absolutely. Because I had to make that choice with Kim, with my significant other.
Oh,
with
the reality shows?
Well, not reality shows, but movies in general.
Okay.
You know, I just choose not to spend my time watching movies. There's nothing right now that I feel I need to gain from
yeah.
that. However, he enjoys it, you know. And at first, I was. You know, like, you know, what are you getting out of this?
More judgmental.
You know, I was being judgmental. I was.
Interesting.
I was being very judgmental.
Yeah.
And I had to step back and check myself on that. You know?
That's because human nature, we go there first.
Yeah.
We just
well,
do.
What's good for me, you know, is good for me, but I can't, when I try to force that on him,
right.
You know, he's not pursuing the courses of study that I'm pursuing. He's not. You know, devoting his life to yoga, like that, you know, and so he doesn't necessarily need to, you know, I mean, it maybe wouldn't hurt him, but it's not, you know, it's not a choice he has, needs to make at this point in his life, and I don't have that authority or even need, you know, to say that.
Probably more importantly, the need.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a given. You don't have the authority.
Yeah.
None of us have the authority
right.
to make that decision for another,
for anyone
right.
else,
right.
for anybody
that's
else.
True. And I think that's partially what Chrissy was saying earlier, too, about the ultimate.
The one
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was going to bring this back around to that because, you know, it is easy. Oh, yeah, there is the one way. But just in you speaking about your situation, what is right for you at this moment is not necessarily right for your partner.
Right.
Same with me. I mean, I am doing this, and my partner is doing something else because that's what's right for him.
Right.
This is right for me right now,
right.
And you can't judge it
right.
because
exactly.
not
because we can't. It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't do any good.
Yeah.
All it does is even cause you more disturbance.
Well, that's it.
And distress. All right, so the next one. Number 10. Abhava Pratyaya Alambana Vritti Nita. Abhava is absence of awareness. Pratyaya is knowledge, understanding, an instrument or means. And Alambana is a dependence on a prop, a mental exercise to bring before one's thoughts the gross form of the eternal. Vritti is a thought wave, and nidra is sleep without dreams. Very specific there. Sleep
really?
Without dreams.
That's why...
sleep is the non-deliberate absence of thought waves or knowledge. Iyengar.
Wow. You would go for that guy?
Well, I was just going to say, in Chip Hartrand, he made the distinction that it's deep sleep, and in deep sleep you don't dream. You know, you go below, and it's not until you
go below REM.
Right, it's deep sleep. So I think it's interesting that that distinction was made. And Shearer's, his interpretation is imagination, is sleep is the mental activity that has at its context the sense of nothingness. And I find that really, the idea of a mental activity content with its content, the sense of nothingness. I mean, that's almost, how do you understand that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Satchitananda, that mental modification supported by cognition of nothingness is sleep.
So, remember, you read both.
Yeah.
So, we were talking, and I talked to you a little bit later about the same thing on the same day, last Wednesday. But Deborah and I were talking first. And I was concerned because, I mean, I didn't think at the time, that I've ever slept without dreaming. But then you, Suzanne, brought it up to me that I wouldn't know if I wasn't dreaming because I wouldn't anything.
You wouldn't have anything left.
You wouldn't have anything left to know about.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't have anything.
It's that nothingness. It's that
nothingness.
It's that content of nothing.
So
sense
how do
of
you
nothing
and you're right. So how can you cognize nothingness? It's like being in a blackout almost. I mean, one remembers a blackout because it's a blackout.
Grounded in the perception that nothing exists.
How do you perceive
nothingness
exists?
See, I don't.
That's an oxymoron.
See, to me, that's beyond human
capacity.
Exactly. I mean, to my small mental thinking here, because we have never been in that state. Our mind is always occupied with something.
And I think that is actually the closest state that we can get to what we're actually, to what they are actually talking about is samadhi, that perfect stillness of the mind.
Right.
The absence of, right? So when that happens, would we even know it's happening? That begs that question now.
I think you can only know once you're out of it and back into reality, and because then you can compare it and say, oh, wow, there was that. You know, like when you meditate.
See, that's exactly what I was going to say.
So
it would come after the fact as having realized a sense of, that was different, or
that was refreshing.
That was calm. That was without. But I don't know that you would necessarily realize it in the moment of it.
I think the moment you realize it,
it's gone.
It's gone.
Exactly, because now you have something you're thinking
on. That happens to me occasionally when I'm in my meditation / contemplation because I can't even call it real meditation at this point.
It's like a spacing out. I don't know.
It's the very minute I get, or the very second that I get to a point of stillness, I think, oh my gosh, I'm at that place.
Yes, exactly.
Then it's gone.
I'll sometimes just space out. I don't have a better way to say it. And it isn't until, I just spaced out, that I realized that I'd done it. And then when you're there, you're good past it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's what is being said about the sleep. Uh-huh. You know, that nothingness. Because when you're in it.
You're in it.
You're in it. Exactly.
You're not.
Profound.
Interesting.
We do have fun with this.
All right. And then the last one we're doing for today, number 11. Anuputa Visaya Asamposa Smriti. Anuputa is perceived experienced knowledge derived from direct perception, inference and comparison, and verbal knowledge. Visaya is an object or sense of an object, an affair or a transaction. let me see if I'm getting this word right here. Asampramosa, that's it, is not allowing to slip away without stealing from anything else.
Say that again. Let me start.
Not allowing to slip away and without stealing from anything else. Two different things. Either not allowing to slip away or without stealing from anything else. Asampramosa.
Okay.
So, and smriti is memory of a thing experienced and recollection of words and experiences. So for Iyengar, memory is the unmodified recollection of words and experiences.
Sure. And memory is the returning to the mind of past experience.
Satchitananda, when a mental modification of an object previously experienced and not forgotten comes back to consciousness, that is memory.
And Chip says...
Mr. Chip.
Remembering is the retention of experiences. So that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Other than pulling it back,
right.
He has his hanging on to him.
Yeah.
But I guess we do that anyway. They have to be in there in order for us to pull them back. So
yeah.
It's just a little bit different, perhaps, way of saying it.
So memories are just basically impressions on our mind of past experiences.
Yeah.
That may or may not be truthful.
Mm-hmm. What they're speaking of in this sutra is that pristine memory, that exact
mm-hmm.
recollection.
Oh.
However, we all know that memory is more than not.
Can be faulty.
Is likely to be very faulty. They become modified, I mean, by all these other. And we'll talk about the combinations of these in just a moment. So you were talking the other day, Deborah, about
mm-hmm.
memory being.
Yeah.
About how you remember how the good old days kind of thing.
Right. How we can. how I had this thought, you know, where something goes wrong, like let's say I have an argument with my husband and I think, you know, when I was single, everything was great. You know, it's like, of course, he's the problem, and really, I mean, when I really look at that, it's like, no, that's not true.
Everything
you know?
Wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, life was life. You have ups and downs no matter what your situation
And he
is.
Isn't really the problem.
Right.
Or just the problem.
Right, exactly. So I think for memory, you know, it can be tainted by our perception.
Mm-hmm.
And we can change the facts of
mm-hmm.
our memory, which can make us unhappy.
I think memory is very fluid. Very, very fluid. And we remember stuff that we want to remember. We remember it the way we want to remember
mm-hmm.
it. That will substantiate whatever need we have at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, oh yeah, I remember da-da-da-da-da. Well, if that's what is corroborating your feeling at the moment, then yeah, okay. But the facts might be something really different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a family member who remembers events that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order to mask painful experiences. There's things in my past that I can't remember. I have big gaps in my memory. And again, it's a defense mechanism. There's also living in the past, being stuck in the past, yearning for the past, you know, wishing to change the past, you know, things that are just, the past is, it's the past.
And it is past.
And it is past, true. So memory is a tricky one. So, let's see. So the five properties of consciousness can be equated to the five fluctuations. So we talked about the five fluctuations just now, and then there's five properties that can be attached to each one of these fluctuations. So ekagra is one-pointed or closely attentive, and that can be attached to memory. Okay, so if we have pristine, perfect memory, we have very closely attended to all of the details in our experience, right? We have, that's where the one-pointed focus comes in, okay? That's when the pure form of memory comes out, right? Mudha, the silly, stupid, ignorant, or dull, okay, can be equated with nidra, or sleep, all right? So when we're vacant, basically vacuous, it's the same as being asleep. It's absent.
In a way, yeah.
Being absent, right. Ksipta, neglected or distracted, with viparyaya, or illusion, delusion. So the viparyaya is the false knowledge. So when we're caught up in false knowledge, we're distracted from the truth. Viksipta, agitation or scatteredness, is with vikalpa, or imagination based on the verbal knowledge or the, you know, the stories or the TVs or whatever. So that causes us to be more scattered, agitated. Unfocused,
yeah.
Right? And niruddha, restraint or control, can be equated with pramana, or correct knowledge. So being very composed.
Okay.
So having that correct knowledge. So these states of consciousness, standing alone in their own extremes, or in combinations of varying degrees with one another, create a potential for an infinite variety of mental states. So how do we achieve freedom from all this? And because it's so prevalent, so much a part of our basic makeup, is it even possible? Do you have any thoughts on that? How do we be free of all these fluctuations?
Well,
people have achieved it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible for humans to achieve it.
Apparently so. That's what yoga says.
Yeah.
May I read something?
Uh-huh.
Patanjali's universe is not relative. Some perceptions are true and others are not. We can know truth by perceiving it directly, by inferring it, or by hearing it from others. We can also misperceive it, misinfer it, or receive incorrect information. In either case, once we begin to imagine what our words evoke, we have subtly turned to a new pattern of thought, conceptualization, that lies at a further remove from reality than inference or testimony. These classifications may seem strange, considering that our concepts are no more than ways to organize, remember, and clarify the truths we think we have perceived. But to Patanjali, concepts are clearly not the same thing as truth. It may also seem odd that Patanjali regards sleep as a pattern of consciousness. After all, deep sleep at least feels like unconsciousness. Imagine, though, that from the perception of omnipresent pure awareness, our purusha, sleep is just another set of forms appearing on the screen of consciousness. In the case of sleep, the patterns happen to feel like nothing at all. But no matter how patterns feel or how they might come and go, awareness is always behind them, unchanging and unfelt. That clarified it a little for me.
So Iyengar says, to resolve this paradox, we have to cast our minds back to the relationship between nature, prakriti, and soul, purusha. Okay? Here we have to discriminate between determinism and inevitability. We are biologically determined by nature for our own evolutionary benefit. At the biological level, this determinism is so strong that it creates inevitability. i.e., we all have two arms, two legs, and one head, etc. At the level of consciousness, deterministic forces produce a strong predisposition in us, for example, to repeat pleasure, avoid pain, flee what we fear, and allow ego and pride to swell. But this is not inevitable. It is merely an unlevel playing field. Yoga is a thoroughly tested technique whereby the will, working through an intelligence that can choose and a self-aware consciousness, can free us from inevitability. By these means, we can walk deliberately toward an individual emancipation, and by the grace of heaven, a universal freedom. It's said that Adam and Eve lived in a state of primal or original oneness. Yoga says that the highest experience of freedom is oneness, the supreme reality of unity. I think that's the truth I was talking about. The predicament of human beings is that we feel ourselves to be stuck in a no man's land between the beginning and the end of an immense journey. Adam and Eve took the first step toward the individuation when they ate the forbidden fruit and lost their primal unity. We're still carrying on their arduous journey. We cannot go back. Where we are is uncomfortable, so we must go on. On the way, we will taste both the sweet and bitter fruits of individuation, and they will be included and integrated in our experience of the journey toward full consciousness. But nothing says we cannot reach the goal of oneness, paradise regained, a final, not a primal, unity. Okay. So basically, it's, yeah, finding it through unity with our soul. That is how we achieve that freedom. Coming into unity with our soul.
Just like that.
Just like that. That easy. Yeah. You know.
No problem. But he mentioned the destruction of the ego, and what was the other thing? Ego and...
And becoming self-aware.
Self-awareness.
Becoming self-aware. And that's actually the first step, is becoming self-aware. And that's what we're doing here.
We're
becoming aware of...
Pursuing.
We're pursuing it, yeah. Maybe not. Maybe not quite achieving, but we're working on it.
Well, that's positive. It's
yeah. And it's a journey, like we've been saying. You know? I mean, it's not something that, you know, there's going to be a test on tomorrow or, you know, next week. We're going to be tested on it continuously, and we're going to sometimes pass some parts of the test and sometimes fail many other parts of the test, you know, but I think hopefully just by learning and continuing to
grow
on, yeah.
That's the growth of our human...
It's our humanness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's being human. So the first steps toward overcoming these primal impulses lie in our awareness of them. So in the next 2 weeks, let's be aware of the operation and effect of right knowledge, wrong knowledge, imagination or television inputs or movie inputs or, you know, radio inputs, memory, the quality of our sleep, on our actions and our experiences. Okay, let's make note of anything that happens in relationship to this that might strike us as important and that we might want to bring back to share with the group. Okay. So that we can begin to really integrate these things into our individual experience.
We have talked about a lot of things this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we took a big chunk there, mm-hmm. 7 through 11.
Well, it's the same things we talked about last time, basically. We just broke it down a little more, you know.
I think we thought about it on perhaps a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. More specifically.
Yeah.
More specifically. So if we can really pay attention to how we react to situations, things, anything that might happen in our lives.
Are you talking about the understanding, the misunderstanding?
Yeah.
The five.
The five, yeah.
The imagination.
Yeah, how any of those might be playing a part in some situation that arises. Not everything in our lives, every time something happens, it's, oh my God, let me go back to the book and see what's going on. But just, maybe upon reflection.
And our reaction
to
things, where our reactions come from and
mm-hmm.
the effects.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right on.
All right.
And then what's the next chunk that we're going to do for next week?
And then for the next week, I think, where is it? Let's see. So for the next one, where am I?
12.
12. I think we'll probably do the next three, the next three. 12, 13, and 14. All right, so this will conclude our discussion for today. Again, I'd like to remind us all to keep in mind the concepts we've discussed as we walk through the next couple of weeks. Let's notice how our experiences in relation to them. Let's notice our experiences in relation to them and see as well how our practice of yoga asana, pranayama, and contemplation or meditation might also bring more clarity to these subjects. We look forward to hearing about each other's observations and experiences in our next meeting.
Remember to check our website and its related links for more information on our future meetings. That's www.wayoftheyogi.com.
For now, walk in peace. But know that though we may make the journey in the company of each other, it is still an individual path we follow to the ultimate unification with the infinite within each of us. Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. May all beings experience the blessings of eternal happiness. Om Shanti. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.